Good evening, everybody. This evening, I would like to point out that you cannot deny the fact that there is a connection between Pesach and Shavuos. And the connection is found in a few halachos. So I think we're going to explore around three halachos this evening, which speak to the undeniable connection between Pesach, which we have just finished, and the holiday of Shavuos, which we are approaching. But first, let's start with the Parsha, as we always do. So uniquely this year, we only have Acharemos without Kedoshim. And believe it or not, there's a pasuk in this week's Parsha, which tells us not to forget about the evil nature of the Mitzrim. So remind the Jews, tell them that I am God. And here is the big mitzvah. The actions of the Mitzrim, don't repeat them. Don't emulate those Egyptians. Now, certainly, Klal Yisrael was at risk for this. We had just lived in their society. We know that our environments certainly have an effect on us. We are influenced by our surroundings. So, therefore, Moshe specifically is instructed by the Ribbono Shel Olam to warn us not to repeat the actions of the Mitzrim. Lo ta'asu u'kamaseh eretz kanana she'ani meveyeschem shama lo ta'asu. And also, the nations where you're heading, the seven nations who live in Eretz Canaan, don't follow their ways either. Don't follow their ways. And believe it or not, the Halachos Gedolos counts the 613 mitzvahs and actually counts this as one of the 613. Namely, K'ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yishavtem Ba Lo Ta'asu. One of the 62 mitzvos is Sheikh Lulav Sukkos, to eat matzah on Pesach, and to not repeat the actions of the Mitzrim. Now, in the context of the Torah, it's talking about sexual immorality. It's not talking about persecution and those types of things. But in the context of the Arayos in this week's Parsha of Illicit Relations, this is the introduction. So we're not going to go into detail about what follows in the Pesukim. But isn't it amazing that the Shabbos after Pesach is over, we have the Torah reminding us this year, don't be like them. Don't be like them. And what we learn from the Torah is that the experience of living in Egypt inherently had a negative effect on our personalities. We were susceptible and at risk of becoming more like them. And when we left Egypt, that negative effect wasn't going away so fast, it lingered. And we know that there was a tremendous transition, specifically in the realm of sexual purity, when we received the Torah. It was hard for us to break away from previous habits. It was not what we were used to, and it was painful and challenging when we had to embrace the Torah's restrictions that are labeled in this week's parsha. But in our own version, our own spiritual calendar, we're going to be leaving Pesach this year, as we just have. And we also have to kind of appreciate the messages of Pesach and certainly not continue maybe some of the negative, quote-unquote, Egyptian practices that we still need to eradicate from our day-to-day lives. So what are these evil actions, says the Rashi over there on the Torah? Mitzrayim mikulkalim umos. So from the fact that the Torah specifies Egypt and the Canaanite nations, that reveals the fact that these were the worst out of all the non-Jews. Wow. So again, these were uniquely wicked people. Okay, so let's try now, as we move away from the holiday of Pesach and we approach Parshat Acharemos, so the Torah told us now not to repeat the actions of Egypt, and we have to kind of travel away from Egypt. And we know that we traveled, obviously, from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael, with the major stop along the way being Har Sinai. That's really what we're doing in the calendar this time of year. We're between Pesach and Shavuos. So I would like to highlight some halachic connections between Pesach and Shavuos. So number one, without going into halacha, the Ramban, as Stuart predicted, was on the Mekoros. The Ramban famously in Parshas Emor writes the following. Matzos Shiva Yamim, Biktusha. And then he says, we count the 49 days of the Omer. V'kodesh Yom Shmini, kishmini shel chag. V'hayamim hasipurim beintam kecholo shel moed ben arishon v'hashmini bechag hu yom matan Torah. Wow. So what is the Ramban pointing out? That the Torah refers to the holiday of Shavuos as Atzeres, which is an allusion to another Atzeres, namely Shmini. What? What do you mean by that? Adam? Oh, I'm sorry. Here, V'tziv b'chag ha-matzah shivis yamim. And you're right. You're definitely right. Let me just see it. V'lachein yikru rabu seinu. Right. So, of course. So, says the Heiliger Ramban, that the reason why, you are right, that the Torah does call the last day of Pesach Atzeres also, right? Yeah, slight caution on the Ramban. That being said, the Ramban, and I have to look at it in details, it could be the Ramban addresses that very point, but either way, the Ramban more famously points out that in the same way that Sukkot culminates with a Shmini Atzeres, so too Pesach culminates with its own Atzeres, namely Shavuos. And the period of Sfiras HaOmer is actually a cholosh shel moed, so to speak. It's a bridge between Pesach and Shavuos. And the days of Sfiras HaOmer, according to this Ramban, at least represent a joyous time compared to Chol HaMoed, which is a fascinating idea. Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's a great question to ask. Stuart Rubin, we know the more common tone of Sfiras HaOmer is negative. It's time of mourning. Now that, it's so ask Stuart. How can the Ramban write that this tragic time period, which by the way, I think the Broyers community still has Putin every Friday night during Sfiras HaOmer to commemorate the Crusades and stuff like that. So how can the Ramban write that it's like Chol HaMoed? Imagine such an answer that maybe it, at that point in history it hadn't really taken off yet, you're saying, right? Yeah, dancing was the original Takana, right. I mean, weddings. Crusades, yeah, that's
then,
the big one.
Then it became more...
Tone of sphere, right.
Because this is, the Ramban is not talking like somebody who's on board, not on board.
Correct, yeah. So I think what your point...
Right. He would have to explain it.
Yes.
He doesn't even mention it.
Yeah, so the more traditional, like prior to the Avelis concept, in its purest form, in Chazal, you'll see, right, the Yemei HaOmer compared to Zayin HaKiyum, right, like a purification process, 7 weeks of, like, purification. And I think Minhag Chabad is to learn Masechah Sota during Sfira. There's a concept of transitioning, right, from animals to humans. We'll learn about maybe...
Just,
right? Well, oh, you know, the, yeah, so the, yeah, yeah. 49 blot, that makes sense. Sota also, though. How many blood in Masechah Sota? That's a good question. You gotta look that one up. How many blood are in Sota? And the answer is there's 15 chapters. All right. So we're not calling Stuart wrong. We're just saying that he's misinformed. You know, he's clearly talking about the. You said 100 something? Where'd you get that from? Oh, Amy, you can't just whip out a number like that. You know, Stuart, you know. Shots, I got. Hold on, I got it. I'm looking it up. Here it is. Sota. How many Dabim are in Sota? 49. You nailed it.
And not 15
Prakim. No, not 15 Prakim. I was misinformed. 9 Prakim. 9 Prakim. 9 Prakim. Not okay. Also, Kedesh. Okay, there are. All right. So very good. So I don't know. My guess on the Minhag Chabad was the animal thing. Yeah. Yeah. That probably has a lot to do. No, it's not as you said. That's too more logical than my pshat. All right. Let's play it cool. Anyway, so you're right. So Stuart's pointing out that the original tone of Sfiras Omer was probably more in line with this Ramban Chol Moed, excited for a Shavuos, not like a Veiv. It's not like a Veiv. But we know the Minhag is not like that. Okay, so that is the first source of the evening that the Ramban calls Sfiras Omer like a Chol Moed. Again, literally connecting Pesach and Shavuos. Nice, very nice. But A.B. Shlita asked me this evening, yesterday rather, Rabbi, maybe this week you could speak about a case where you sell chametz and the guy you sold your chametz to dies or is imprisoned. So I asked A.B. where this question was coming from. I had real concerns. You know, as I was eating my Cheerios, like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that the guy was nifta, you know. So I did find the shayla explicitly. You knew the shayla. You knew the shayla. So this halacha, we know, Chamesh Shavar LePesach, doesn't necessarily connect us from Pesach to Shavuos, but it points out that Pesach needs to linger a little bit. We know that when Pesach is over, it's not like over. There's still halachic ramifications, right? If chametz was owned by a Jew, you cannot benefit from that chametz. So let's just go into the technical, unique shahs before we go back to the basics. So the Elef Lecha Shlomos or Shlomo Kluger, he was asked about this question, where if you sold your chametz to a Nachri, and in the middle of Pesach, he was taken prisoner. So what happens? You want to buy your chametz back from him. So what do you do? V'lo haya efshar liknos mimenu as a chametz. So would anyone want to take a guess as to what you should do in that case? Meaning you want to buy it back. Imagine you are looking to purchase, I don't know, $100 worth of chametz from, you know, John Brown, who is in jail. So what's the deal? Okay, gotta be there. Yeah, Robert, what do you think? Bail him, that's a good answer. Bail him, man. Yeah, it's the... Yeah.
Say you were going to give him $100, so give him $110. Put that aside for him.
Very smart.
You would know that he would accept it in a heartbeat.
Right. So AB is pointing out that maybe there's such a concept of having a transaction without the other party present. Wow. I mean, not to be zocha is different, right, than a mechira, right? I mean, zocha and adam shalom b'fanav to acquire something on your behalf, right? I haven't learned those terms in quite some time. But I don't know if that would work by a bona fide mechir like this. Yeah. Right. That's another piece. But he needs to show, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's a major part of this tshuva. Oh, so we'd hope not. So the main point he makes is the following. Just to take the chametz back, listen, it's $100 worth of chametz, so I'll just take the chametz back for that value without actually giving that value to the goy. He says, ain't nearly why dizahave kamo arama. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to avoid, where harama is where it's like a sneaky, sleazy type of thing. Because let's say it was really the chametz that belonged to a non-Jew. A trick, yeah.
Right, but it's a trick that's okay to do.
Right. In this context, the Ram has a negative connotation. Yeah, that's also true. I'm not getting there. But he gives a scenario. He says like this. Well, again, we do it as well as we can. Again, it's legit. There are imayah chametz shel hanachri. Yeah, I know, of course. Okay, I'm saying harama does often mean...
It's a maneuver.
Maneuvers are good. But it could have a negative connotation there. Okay, yeah. So yeah, you guys are outsmarting as usual. That the harama does not always have a negative connotation. Okay, I admit, as usual. So the imayah chametz shel nachri mamish. So let's say the chametz really belong to a nachri. Imagine such a thing where John Brown goes to jail. And you have a great idea. I want to buy his chametz. Would you ever take his chametz while he's in jail? Imagine such a thing. That's crazy. So says the Elef Lecha Shlomo, Well, in the same way that you wouldn't purchase chametz from him when he was in jail, so who's to say that you can purchase chametz back from him? I mean, you think this is different. Because, listen, it was yours, you knew all along you would buy it back, etc. But says the Elohim Shlomo, whoa, 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 meaning you have to treat this chametz as if it was never yours. Because it was really sold to him. So imagine it was ever yours. Would you ever think that you would buy chametz from a Jew, from this non-Jew in jail?
Wouldn't do it from him not in jail.
Right. Right. Well.
Unless he had a grocery store or something. But you're not going to go running to him.
Right. No, but the point is that legally, there's no way to even do it. Meaning, you would never be so bold as to go to an inmate's home, take something off his shelf, say, I'll pay him later. That's insane. That's gzela, right? Meaning, listen, I know John Brown's in jail. So let me go to his house, take his chews. He's not eating them. They're going to expire by the time he's out of prison. Very good. But it's not in his house.
Your house.
Very good. Very good. So again, I wanted to just point out that, he points out that obviously Gezel Nachmi is Usser, Kamosh Shel Yisrael, and therefore you cannot just collect the item. You can't just collect it. So that's not okay. So let me just try to find the main idea over here. So he says, yeah, he says you actually have to go to Beis Din. He says, very good, AB, thank you for pointing that out. Ulekach nira, diyelech eitzel Beis Din. You have to go to Beis Din. V'hem yasum alochem so bedamav. So they have to come up with a certain number. And essentially, you're going to work through Beis Din as a middleman to complete the transaction. So again, there's a lot there, which I did not go into. However, let's just understand that we treat the Mechiras Chametz nowadays as very serious. It's a very formal transaction, which is binding. And therefore, if the Goy is in prison, you can't just take it back. It's at a minimum. Okay, without going into all the details. So the two main points that we're going to take out of this, Elach Lashlomo is number one, you can't just take it. And number two, Beis Din can play a role. All right, now the Maharsham actually asks your question, A.B., but what if the Goy died? So the Maharsham, right, Rav Shlomo Shvadron Zatzal, so pointed out that there are two scenarios. If the Goy dies and he has Yorshim, that is a much easier scenario because by Torah law, his children will inherit his assets, his money, his belongings. So therefore, you can simply buy it back from his children. But what if he dies and there are no children in the picture? So it's Hefker. So what do you do if it's Hefker, right? So where is it, right? So that'll get like a, you know, if it's in his house versus your house. Now, what if he dies on like the second day of Pesach, Robert? And it's Hefker in your house. What's the problem with that? That's not good, right? It's like the Shiloh where if the mailman delivers chametz in the middle of Pesach, right? This happens sometimes, right? So whatever, let's say you're a doctor. You know, my father's a doctor. And his patients often give him, like, treats or whatever. You know, so imagine someone who's not all sensitive to, we'll say, the religious differences. And they get him, let's say, a box of cookies in honor of the holiday season or whatever, spring holiday, so to speak. And they deliver a box of cookies. So that's a big problem, right? What do you do? And you don't want your house to acquire it on your behalf. So, again, ultimately, he concludes that you can be makil. But I wanted to at least acknowledge your questions, A, because again, they were very real questions. So ultimately, if the Yorshim inherit it, you buy it back from the Yorshim. If it's Hefker, there are halachic loopholes to argue that your property didn't acquire it for you because you didn't really want it, and therefore it is permissible to eat it even after Pesach. Oh. Yeah, it does, yeah. No, that's not a modal, Mikano Lahaba. It happened last year. My wife, you know, ShopRite is a wonderful place, but they, you know, you can make mistakes in ShopRite on Chol HaMoed Pesach in particular. So I'm sitting in my kitchen last year, and my sister-in-law, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, from Efrat, is sitting there, and she's looking at my wife's Pesach cabinet, and she sees these breadcrumbs, whatever, and she says, are those really kosher the Pesach? And I picked them up, and my wife picks them up, and they're like, nope, chametz gomor in my kitchen. So I quickly look at my wife, and I say, when did you buy these? She said, before Pesach. I say, phew. Now again, the Shabbos didn't use them. number one. They weren't like in a recipe, few, you know, and she already bought them before Pesach. So therefore what? They were included in the bittul, and they were included in the sale. Weren't even mine. So what did I do? You easily just put them away with your hummus. No issues. But if she had purchased them after the sale, that would have been a chiyuv to dispose of them. So that's what the first question I said is, when did you buy them? So Baruch Hashem, she had purchased them prior to the sale of chametz. Okay, so point number two of the shiur is that there's a concept called chametz avar l'pesach. Now, we're going to just conclude here, this part of the shiur, that there are two reasons behind this halacha. So, again, Pesach is supposed to linger. It's supposed to connect us to Shavuos. But the chametz issue lingers. So why do you think there's a problem of chametz she'avar alav Pesach? So what? All right. There's chametz, but Pesach is over. So says the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah Perek Aleph. I forgot to write which halacha it is in that perek. Chametz she'avar alav Pesach asur b'na le'olam v'davar z'knas midivrei sofrim. So this is a din midin rabbanon, right? The issur is midivrei sofrim. It's a fine. The rabbanon pose like a fine on us. Meaning, since you violated the Issur Midor Raisa of owning chametz on Pesach, the Rabbanon slap a fine on you and say that since you violated the Issur of owning chametz, you're not allowed to benefit from that chametz anymore. But what if you were totally innocent, says the Rambam, even if it was an accident or even an ones, even if it was totally out of your control? No, not good. Not allowed to benefit from that chametz. Why? Because we don't want people abusing the system. We don't want people like Arama. We don't want people maneuvering and coming up with plans. Oh, well, listen, I'll keep chametz in my possession. I won't eat it. And after Pesach, I'll enjoy it. No good. We don't want people doing that. And the tour actually focuses on this only the second reason, and he quotes it from the Gemara Yushalmi. The tour says, the chametz shenimsa bebe'ayis Yisrael, achar Pesach, oser b'Yushalmi, aval pisha bitlo. Do you imagine thing? I didn't violate Ba'yir Avay Matze. I said kol chamira. I said any chametz under my roof is like the dust of the earth, it's null and void, etc. After Pesach was over, I said, oh my gosh, there was a bag of pretzels in the cabinet over there. I had no idea. I didn't violate an Issur Midor Raisa because I nullified them. Nonetheless, says the tour, you have to throw the pretzels out. Why? Wait, you mean to tell me I can eat the pretzels? Not so bad. So what am I going to do next year? I'm going to keep the pretzels in my cabinet. And if anyone asks, I'll just say that I was mevatel them. So says the tour, we need to understand that people have a tough time throwing out their food, wasting money, and therefore we don't want people to start lying and pretending they were mevatel the chametz when they were really not. No, because they were included in the sale. Oh, so in conclusion, we'll conclude that. Anything included in the sale?
No, you didn't know about it to sell it.
When you sell your chametz.
Yeah, so this guy's going to say the same thing. I sold
it. Very good. So again, there's got to be a limit to the dinim. AB, you're right in terms of your logic.
But with the tourist case is the same.
So you want to say.
The tourist case different.
No,
case where this guy sold his chametz or didn't sell
it. We're going to say did not sell his chametz.
Did not sell it.
So we're going to conclude that AB is a very, very sharp question. It's directly on point. But the Aruch HaShulchan does have a little bit of he points out, he's an organization of the Sugya, that there are two reasons to explain the Isser of Chametz She'avar Alav HaPesach. Reason number one is because it's a fine that you violated Ba'ari Alei Matzah. It's a knas. It's a fine. So that was the Rambam. And reason number two is the tour. We don't want people to abuse the system. We don't want harama, conniving strategies. So therefore, we just make a blanket rule. Even if you were mevatel, we don't want people lying the next year, even when they weren't really mevatel.
It also says, it's not like pork or something.
Yes.
Out of your house.
Yeah, we're more likely to mess this up. Very good. Very good.
So you would have the same thing with people who sell their chametz.
Okay.
They're not matriach themselves to go and look carefully because they know, A, I sold it. B, I'm mevatel. So what if I have it lying around? So you can have the same problem that
it's
somebody's going to find it, or a kid's going to find it, and a kid could eat it on Pesach.
AB, you're saying good. You're saying, all right, well, let's get there in a second.
If you're doing a knas, the knas should be on anything you find.
All right, I hear what you're saying, but let's get there in a second. The Aruch HaShulchan just points out in terms of lamdas and analysis that these two reasons are really one and the same. The real reason is we don't want people violating Bal Yireh Matzeh, and therefore we fine you if you violated. The second layer of the Yerushalmi is that we don't want people lying the next year. Again, it's just an added layer to protect people from violating the Esim Midoraisa of violating Bal Yireh Matzeh. And the Aruch HaShulchan very sharply pointed out the Rambam really mentions both reasons. So again, the Aruch HaShulchan is just the one who just, I think, very sharply organizes the sugya. He points out, like, the Rambam says one thing, maybe the Torah says the other thing. And the Rambam really says both things if you look close enough. All right, now again, on a very practical level, what do we paskin? That if a Jew owns chametz over Pesach, so after Pesach is over, he is not allowed to benefit from that, even if the Jew was completely mistaken and he completely was innocent. It was an ones. But then he writes, "Machro onas leYehudi shemichutz lebeiso kodem Pesach." But if he sold it, you're basically okay. Even if you knew the non-Jew was going to sell it back. So AB is bothered by this. And he says, come on. This is too lenient. Like, people are going to abuse this system also. So you are right, obviously, AB, that once you tell the Jewish community that they're allowed to sell their chametz, so people are going to maybe search less, and it's going to take away from that drive to eradicate every last nook, you know, cranny, every last crumb. And you're right. You're right. But at the same time, the halacha is the halacha. And one of the reasons we encourage mechiras chametz is for this reason. We don't want people getting into problems with the halacha of not being able to benefit from chametz once Pesach is over. And even if people really take the bedikah and the biur very seriously, we tell them to sell the chametz anyway, just in case they miss something. So worst case scenario, they missed dinner and was included in the sale, and therefore they could still benefit from it after chametz, after Pesach is over. But you are right. You're right. Logically, one could certainly have argued, like, what do you mean? This is just giving people a green light to abuse the system more and more. But I think the bottom line is, in living in this generation, no one messes with chametz. People do sell their chametz a lot, and people are very quick to even go away for Pesach and sell their whole house. But that's actually good. Because that's kosher. That's kosher. You want to say it's a little bit too easy? I hear it. But I think it's very helpful. It protects a lot of Jews. And it does a lot of good. And a lot more good than harm, in my opinion. And even people who put the pizza in the freezer so they can benefit from it right after Pesach's over and they sell it. You know what? They didn't violate any deen. And you want to say, well, that's not really what it was intended for originally. Okay, I hear it. But ultimately, I think the Jews are innocent. Yeah. Yes,
and
yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is a chumrah to not sell what we call chametz gomor, like bread, cookies, yeah. Pasta. But by letter of the law, you're absolutely allowed to do it. I mean, the whole. The letter of law is certainly. Yeah, meaning the whole idea is to save money. People who own liquor stores, you know, didn't want to lose all their profit. That being said, if you're going to throw out $50 of pasta and crackers and whatever, so the halacha is sensitive to that, you know. So again, obviously there's something to say about being a little strict and you know, being honest if you can afford it, you know, or not. But let's just say I know very prominent, respectful Yirei Shemayim who are not so quick to waste $50, and then they'll sell chametz gomor if it's closed. If it's closed, I think that's another distinction. If it's unopened, then you know it's going to cost them a decent amount of money. They do sell chametz gomor. All right, the last two points I wanted to make here is famously the mitzvah of Sirus HaOmer that we're in. The general understanding is that Sefirah Omer B'Zman HaZeh is a mitzvah midirabanan, because we no longer bring the korban omer. Yet famously, the Rambam holds that mitzvah zu al kol ish yisrael uvechol makum uvechol zman. So the Rambam says that Sefirah Omer nowadays is even a mitzvah midoraisa, and everyone has to figure out why would the Rambam hold that Sefirah Omer is a mitzvah midoraisa nowadays in light of the fact that we no longer bring the korban omer. Now there are some more famous answers, more lumdish answers, you know, in the Rav, the Briscoe world. However, the Aruch HaShulchan actually holds that maybe what the Rambam means to say is that the primary reason behind counting the Omer has nothing to do with the Korban Omer, but rather has to do with counting towards Matan Torah. And in the same way that the Midrash says that in the original Yetzias Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael were well aware that they were going to Har Sinai, and they actually were counting down the days literally, so too when we count the Omer, we're not counting days from the bringing of the Korban Omer, or even as a Zecher to that Mitzvah, but no, we're literally counting down to Matan Torah, which would still explain why it's a Deoraisa nowadays. So again, another halacha. So Chametz Shavar LePesach proved that like Pesach lingers. And this is another example of where we see a connection between Pesach and Shavuos, whereby the Aruch HaShulchan is explaining that the whole concept of Shiras HaOmer is literally a countdown to Matan Torah, literally connecting Pesach and the holiday of Shavuos. And another connection is the famous Ramban. The Ramban somehow holds that mitzvah women are obligated to count Omer. Why? We generally assume and practically assume women are not obligated technically to count Omer. They want to count Omer. That's wonderful. They took it upon themselves to count. Beautiful. However, there's no question. The Rambam says nashim va'avanim p'turim mimena. It's a mitzvah asay shazman gram. It's a positive time-bound mitzvah, and they are exempt. Yet the Ramban and his parish in Maseches Kedushin, his Kedushin Mashas, says black on white that women are obligated to count the Omer because it is not a mitzvah saseh shemazim agram. How could it? You have to count the days of the Omer. It's like a time-bound mitzvah. That's what you're doing. Very good. So there are two answers which I think so beautifully illustrate what I'm trying to accomplish this evening. So why would the Ramban argue that it's not a mitzvah that is bound by time? Says the Avnei Nezer, well, you could argue that it's not the core, it's not the date, Tet Zion Nisan, the 16th day of Nisan, that triggers the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, but rather what the Avnei Nezer argues, that the mitzvah is triggered by Pesach. By Pesach. And in the same way that women have to do Pesach, Matzah, Maror, Magid, they also have to count Sfira. The Avnei Nezer himself doesn't necessarily like it so much. He gives like three suggestions to give pshat in the Ramban. He is not necessarily convinced by any of them. But what an amazing concept of the Avnei Nezer that Sfiras HaOmer is a Pesach mitzvah. And by the way, in Shulchan Aruch, where is Hilchos Sfiras HaOmer found? In Hilchos Pesach. And what a beautiful contrast. The Divrei Malkiyo. I heard from Rav Schechter, and I have it in front of me. I didn't put it on the sheet. When I made the sheet, it was not yet there. I forgot. Dimmelke was a big gadol in Poland in the 1800s, a contemporary of the Avnei Nezer. What does the Divrei Malkiyo say? The same logic, but with a different specification. Women are obligated to count the Omer. You know why? Because the mitzvah is connected to the holiday of Shavuos. And women have to do it because it's a hachana for the korbanos atzibur of Shavuos, and in the same way that women are included in the korbanos of Shavuos and the dinim of Shavuos, they also have to what? They also have to count Omer. Isn't that amazing that you have two of the Gedolei Achronim saying different pshatim? One of them is saying that Sfiras HaOmer is a Pesach mitzvah, and one of them is saying that it's a Shavuos mitzvah, and you can't argue that Sfiras HaOmer is pulling us in both directions. On one hand, it's allowing us to grow from Pesach towards Shavuos. And you can literally view Sfiras HaOmer both as an extension from Pesach and an anticipation towards Shavuos. And the halacha is telling us that it's not enough to just leave Pesach and wait for Shavuos. We need to, quote-unquote, leave Mitzrayim and approach Matan Torah, be mekabel the Torah, be worthy of accepting the Torah. And Be'ezras Hashem, we'll all grow out of the negative midos of Mitzrayim and learn to be Jews who are worthy to receive the Torah this year, Be'ezras Hashem.